is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting at all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and wrong. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, and welcome back to it. It is Monday here on the program. Glad to have you along for the ride. It's going to be a wet day for a lot of us here in Michigan. Keep that in mind. Scattered storms, maybe a couple of strong spots. Not an event that'll affect everybody, but there could be a couple of strong cells here and there. So I just make you aware of it. Let's go. We have a hotline call. The phone number, by the way, if you ever want to join the conversation, 888-900-9966. Matt on the line. Matt, welcome to the program.
Yeah, this might take a little bit of time to explain, but not much. Okay, there's the ladder of the system that we have, goes from the individual to the capitalist system to the collective government. And what's happening here is the collective government is not shoring up the public works programs, meaning they're not taking care of the roads, bridges, and stuff like that. We all know that. What they're doing is reaching into the individual's responsibility. Capitalism will make the products cheaper if government gets out of the realm of capitalism. What happens is capitalism is a step on a ladder. It goes from the individual as the first step. The second step is capitalism makes the product cheaper. The third step is the collective. I'll give you an example. A library is for the public.
Mm-hmm.
The government takes care of that. They don't deliver the books to the individual. That's capitalism. See, they are trying to deliver the books now.
No, they're trying to take over our whole system, Matt, and I understand.
They're making
that.
The list longer. That's what it is. The longer the list, the more expenses you have. You can go endless on individual stuff. And that's the problem with it. The collective is smaller. That's why the government expenditures are bigger. So if you do the list shorter, it shores up the base of the collective, and otherwise it spreads. There's not enough butter to spread around in everybody's bread.
That's why socialism fails. Thank you for calling in, Matt. The fact of the matter is, when you take it over completely, the incentives are gone. The individualism is gone. Capitalism is the greatest engine of creation of wealth in the history of mankind, which is why America has done so well for so many decades and generations. Yet they can't leave well enough alone. They just think that they can do better. They're smarter. They know better about how to deal with all of these things. And the fact is they don't. A little bit of good news here today. I want to shift gears. It's been over 2 months now since the deadly shootings in Kalamazoo. One of those survivors making incredible progress, Abigail Kopp, 14 at the time, they thought she was dead. She was pronounced dead. And then she squeezed her mother's hand. Well, not only did she survive, she is making an incredible comeback. Six died that night, and she is defying the odds. Her mother, Vicky, and Abigail spoke to Good Morning America just a little bit ago. Here's part of that. Go.
She's one strong little girl.
Yeah, I am.
She's breathing? She's smiling?
That's all that matters. She's beautiful, and she's with us.
And there you have it. You know, it's just an incredible comeback. Incredible comeback. There's your motivational soundbite for the day. She's with us. Have faith. When the chips are down, just have faith, I suppose, is the lesson to be learned there. Shifting gears now to some politics for the day. The big battle tomorrow will include Maryland and, well, I guess the big prize for tomorrow is Pennsylvania. Donald Trump doing very well. They're leading there. And he was out on the candidate. Now what you have is Ted Cruz and John Kasich working together, basically saying, don't vote for either one of us in this state, but vote for me in that state. It's a strange approach for two guys that want to be president. No, they cannot get the number of delegates needed, Cruz and Kasich. Now, interestingly enough, after tomorrow, Ted Cruz could be mathematically eliminated. He called for Governor Kasich to step out. here recently saying he couldn't possibly win. I wonder if Ted Cruz will take his own advice. If you can't mathematically win, Ted, Senator, will you leave? Anyhow, out on the campaign trail over the weekend, Donald Trump making some last-minute stops in states along the eastern seaboard. Clip six, go.
He voted against an amendment to try and block currency cheating by China, and Ted Cruz voted against it, and it's the single biggest weapon that China and other countries have against us for just absolutely destroying our businesses. And this guy voted against it. It's almost impossible to vote against it if you love our country. But you know what happened? Somebody got to him and said, listen, we want you to vote against it because some company or some country didn't want it. And this is what we have running for office. No more, folks. We're going to end it, okay? Okay? We're taking in tens of thousands of people. And you know what? We all have heart, and we want to take care of that. But we don't know where these people are coming from. Totally, like they have no documents, totally undocumented. We have enough problems in our country. We've got $19 trillion in debt. We've got a border. The southern border is like a piece of Swiss cheese, and we'll talk about it. We will build the wall. Yes, we will build the wall. Our country can be abused by politicians that are so corrupt or so incompetent that we continue to go along. But we're sitting on a big, fat bubble. And we better get going fast because it's not going to be pretty. It'll be like no other. And we better get going fast. Okay? We better get going fast. Thank you.
And that's part of the sound from over the weekend. Speaking of the conversation between the Cruz and Kasich campaigns, the arrangement, as I said, marks a sharp reversal for Cruz's team, which aggressively opposed the idea of a coordinated anti-Trump effort as recently as last week. Yet it underscores a bleak reality for the billionaire businessman's Republican foes. Time, well, it's running out. Trump tweeted out, wow, just announced that Lyon, Ted, and Kasich are going to collude in order to keep me from getting the Republican nomination. Desperation, he says. He said they're mathematically dead and totally desperate. Their donors and special interest groups are not happy with them. Very sad. And an official statement from the Trump campaign called the move a horrible act of desperation from two campaigns that have horribly failed. Horribly failed. We'll watch those returns tomorrow, but it's likely Donald Trump will take all five. When building a new home, your options should be wide open. With Greenstone, you can choose to pick up the hammer or let someone else do the heavy lifting. Our construction loans are designed to fit your needs, from do-it-yourself projects and fully contracted to home sites on acreage of any size. Greenstone offers competitive rates with low down payments. And with 31 Michigan locations, they are just a short drive away. To learn more, visit greenstonefcs.com. Greenstone Farm Credit Services, your custom home lender, supporting The Steve Gruber Show. Back in a moment.
The Steve Gruber Show, American values with Midwestern common sense.
After on a Monday, welcome to it. The menu last night included wild turkey and eggplant. Yeah, my life's pretty cool. I'll give you that. That was the menu last night at the Gruber household. Ivy doing her magic in the kitchen. But menu mandates and obesity, it's a futile effort. So says our next guest, Dr. Aaron Yelowitz, is an associate professor in the Department of Economics at the University of Kentucky. He is also a joint faculty member in the Martin School of Public Policy and Administration at Kentucky and an adjunct scholar with the Cato Institute. Doctor, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Glad to have you here. Listen, give me an idea here. All of these, we hear a lot of talk these days about diets and this and that. Of course, Michelle Obama and different things get said and should eat fat or sugar. I mean, there is a lot of confusion because there are a lot of mixed messages or contradicting messages out there. Could you help us out a little bit, please?
In a way, I think the answer is I can't, and neither can these menu mandates. Basically, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, wants to put in mandatory calorie disclosure on restaurant menus. And the logic behind it seems exceedingly simple and seems like it could be a quick fix for America's obesity problem. Basically, people might make smarter choices by choosing lower calorie options when they're at McDonald's or Subway or Wendy's. What my research shows is that that's not the case. A number of cities like New York and Seattle and a handful of other places implemented such mandates. And you know what happened to obesity? Nothing.
We're still way too big is what you're saying. Well, but in fairness, I will tell you this, and I don't know about yourself if you ever go into many fast food restaurants. I do on occasion when I travel, and I do look up at the menu, and I do review the number of calories, and I make a decision sometimes based solely on that. Well, that sounds good, but I'm going to go with this item over here because it's 200 calories less. I do that. I have to believe that other people, I can't be the only guy, can I?
You're not. In fact, you're speaking to one. I dropped probably 30 pounds by making substitutions like that. But the real question isn't whether, for example, you look up at the menu or you grab your smartphone and you use an app or you buy a book like Eat This, Not That, which not only talks about calories but also other things that would make you more satisfied when you eat the meal. The real question is, does the government have any business in telling a restaurant whether or not to do that? You do it, and I do it because we're motivated to do so. And that's why, for example, you might kind of stay at the weight that you are. If someone's not motivated to do it, all it's going to do is shame them into feeling bad about what they were already going to eat. And we don't need the government to be in the business of shaming people into eating a salad rather than a cheeseburger.
Well, and some would say, depending on how you eat that salad, it might not do you any good anyway, depending on what you put on top of the salad. So there is that. And I agree with you. It's not the government's place to tell me how to use my fork. I don't think any more than it's the government's place to tell me what I can wear, you know, as far as what's on my shirt and so forth. I don't think it's the government's place. On that, I will agree with you, Doctor. But is it the government's place to try to help people be healthier and live better lives? Is there any role for the government in this conversation?
That's an interesting question. The answer is perhaps if this kind of mandate actually did improve health, that would be a good conversation to have. What my research does is it looks at a well-known, long-standing health surveillance system. I look at 300,000 people. I look at a bunch of cities, some of which implemented these sorts of regulations, others of which did not, and I found absolutely no effect. So had I found that it did drop weight, that it did reduce obesity, then that would be a terrific question to ask, whether the government can improve health by mandatory disclosure. On the other hand, since it has no effect, then basically it seems like a waste.
Let me ask you this. Is there a place, you hear, again, it's ever-changing as to what the government tells you you should eat. Cholesterol is bad. Cholesterol doesn't matter. Salt's bad. Salt doesn't matter. Things change. Don't eat fat. Fat doesn't really hurt you. Don't eat sugar. Now, sugar could be something we could agree on in large quantities. It is not good. Creates internal fat, creates fat in your internal organs and so forth, and creates a surge in your serum cholesterol when you eat too much sugar. We liver puts that out. Is there a place in the government to say, listen, we should reduce the amount of, say, high fructose corn syrup in the foods that are being produced? Is there a role for government somewhere in that conversation?
The answer might be, in principle, it seems like it would improve health. What we always need to do is ask, at the end of the day, is health markedly different? Remember, Michelle Obama's crusade in public schools started 8 years ago now. Are kids really that much healthier in public schools than they used to be? My own kids basically want lunch from home rather than eating the school lunch because of those kinds of regulations. So the natural question is, the logic behind it is inassailable. We have some sense that certain things are worse than others. But whether people want to change their lifestyle because of the information or regulations is a separate question. If we make food taste bad, they'll just eat other food.
Well, there is that. And if you keep putting additives, so it's kind of a tough struggle you put out here, Doctor. Dr. Aaron Yelowitz here from the University of Kentucky and also working with the Cato Institute. How do we get healthier then? We've got about a minute left here. If the government really doesn't help, and it's not really necessarily their role. What can we do?
Well, the real answer is that it's not easy. But if one wanted to try and improve health, then these ticky-tack little regulations, which simply remind you that when you eat that cheeseburger, you feel bad about it, but you're still going to eat it rather than the salad option. The real way that an economist would argue is you make people internalize the cost of their actions. If you go and buy health insurance on healthcare.gov, you pay zero different of a premium if you're a smoker versus a if you're overweight versus not overweight. Last time we spoke, we actually spoke about smoking.
Right.
But basically, what economists would say is, what we think is that heavier people probably cost more for the healthcare system. So why in the world would we price them the same as people who are not overweight?
That's a fair question.
By making people realize the full cost of their actions, we probably can get them to take somewhat different actions.
Dr. Aaron Jelowitz, great conversation. You can find out more at the Cato Institute. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Genuine Michigan common sense on display every day.
Monday here on the Steve Gruber Show. Glad to have you on board. For any of you that listen closely to this program or for any period of time, realize that I spend a lot of time outdoors. I've been making television shows for the Outdoor Channel for years. I was on a wild turkey hunt over the weekend. Ivy killed a big bird with a crossbow in Ohio. Great footage. Just loved it. We had that for dinner last night, by the way. It was incredible. But one of the things on my bucket list, that I haven't gotten to is catching a bluefin tuna. I had a couple of guys invite me to come fish the last couple of years, but said the water wasn't quite right. Well, for our next guest, the water not being quite right or, you know, everything not being perfect doesn't really matter. They have to go for it anyway. Paul Hebert is featured in National Geographic Channel's Wicked Tuna. He's the captain and owner of the Wicked Pasa. Paul, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, man. Happy to be here, man.
Hey, let me ask you something. I do watch this show a lot, and I watch all you guys battle back and forth, the young guys, the old guys. Do you guys really, I mean, is there really that much competition out there? Square up with me.
It's worse than what you see. I was just telling another guy, it's so much worse than what they show. You know, it really is. It's like I was saying, like, you know, we'll all talk to each other, but then, you know, when you walk away, you got to remember this is our livelihood.
Right.
You know what I mean? This is what we do for a living. It's not like we're going out there. It's not like a game to us. It's different. My brother always said, why don't we have any pictures of ourselves with fish? It's because we do it for a living, you know? We don't take the pictures, you know?
So how did this all come together for you, then? How did this all come together? You're a third-generation guy.
What's that?
I said you're a third-generation fisherman, right? You've been fishing out of Gloucester for three generations. How do you get out of being on a TV program about it?
It's a we were in the right place at the right time. I mean, years ago, you got to remember, my father did this in the 50s. My brothers did it in the 70s and 80s, and now I'm still doing it. I'm the youngest of six boys.
Well, that's
I'm the youngest one. My dad did it. My grandfather did it. My mom used to do it with my father. This is all we know. We know, you know, tuna fishing and carpentry. That's all we've ever done.
And so somebody comes walking down the dock one day and says, hey, you right there. Yeah, you, Paul. We want to do a TV show. And you say, what the hell are you talking about?
Well, what they did, it's a long story, but what they did was they had somebody in L.A., like they always do, and they had they probably did some Google searches on tuna fishing, you know, because it is the most beautiful. You remember, these fish are 1,000-pound fish, some of them. I mean, they're the most beautiful, strongest fish in the ocean, you know.
Yeah.
And they're the biggest sport fish there is, and we just happen to make a living catching them one at a time by way of rod and reel.
Yeah, they're tackle breaking monsters. I mean, they break your gear. They go crazy. Stuff breaks. I mean, it goes on. And I've been there fishing for big fish in my life, so I have a pretty good appreciation. And there's nothing more heartbreaking than to see the fish, whatever kind of fish it may be, close to the boat, and all of a sudden he breaks off. He's gone. He throws the hook. Whatever, that your heart just sinks. I don't care if you're on TV or what you're doing. That's the worst feeling in the world.
I've had a year. Like, because I've never owned my own boat. This is my first year that I, you know, had my own boat. I've been doing this 40 years. You know what I mean? I'm 51 years old now. I've been doing it since I was 8 years old. And I finally, you know, got the money to, because you don't make the money you need to make, you know, on being a mate. So I struggled and I saved all my pennies and I finally got my own boat. So now I'm seeing the other side of it as well. I mean, it costs a lot of money to go out there and spend weeks at a time. We don't catch them every day. I mean, I've gone, you know, 2-3 weeks without landing one. That's hard to do. Can you imagine not getting a paycheck for 3 weeks?
No.
After working 20 hours a day? We do that. That's, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the stakes get higher. Your mates aren't getting paid. They're getting pissed off. But that's how it is. This fishery, to do it for a living, is not for everybody. But what keeps us going is when you go out there and catch a double. Or, you know, you go out there and you catch a couple. But this episode tonight, it's the first time ever that anyone's even heard of catching a hooking up to a quad. 4 fish at once is tonight's episode.
Really?
Really?
How do you keep those lines? Yep, because how do you get them not to cross lines? I mean, that's, you get 2 big fish on, it's panic time. 3 is a disaster. 4?
Yeah.
I don't know what you'd do.
It's never been heard of. That's why the rest of the fleet, when they heard we hooked up to a quad, they were beside themselves. Oh, they were so, they were upset, boy.
So, all right, who's your biggest competition out there? Who is it out there that you just really want to beat every day? Who runs their mouth that you just want to pound on them? And by the way, we're on the phone here with Captain Paul Ebert from the Wicked Passaw, from National Geographic's Wicked Tuna series, which I love the show, by the way. It's one of the few things I watch on TV. But who is the guy? Is it Tyler? Who really rubs you wrong?
I, you know, the biggest, pretty much all of them. I mean, you got to remember, there's a guy, TJ. Like, I don't. I do it for different reasons than a lot of people do. You know, TJ's got a big, beautiful boat. It's a family-owned boat. It's a, you know, like a 50-foot boat. It's big. It's beautiful. You know, his family helped him get it. You know, they're okay. I mean, they'll be fine. Tyler's fine. He's a hard worker, good fisherman. Now, Dave, I've been working with Dave for years. Him and I have been friends forever. Have we had fights? Absolutely. But does he, you know, he definitely knows that I'm a contender now because I did it on my own. I had a lot of pressure this year. Everybody, you must have saw it, and that's worse. It's worse than what you see. I mean, you know,
what
the competition
see
is really tough.
Yep.
They try to kick you down when you're up. You know,
and keep you down when you're down. That's the worst part. When you're going through a drought and you're not hitting them and you're going 3 or 4 days and they're putting a couple fish on the deck and you're going, man, we're not getting it done. I mean, that's terrible because you're right. You're working 15, 18, 20 hours a day, whatever it turns out. You're exhausted.
They love that. They love when I was, like, without a mate. Like, this year, like, I had problems with my mates again. You know, it was my biggest learning curve, learning how to deal with people. You know what I mean? Because all the weight's on my shoulders. They're mates. They get to just walk down the boat and say, okay, let's go. You know what I mean? It's a different thing now, and I'm learning how to deal with them. And I finally get into my groove, and I start pounding the fish. And the other guys just can't take it. It's like if anybody does good, they just can't handle it.
All right,
you know?
Tonight's show.
Instead of being happy for someone, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I like it. I like the competition. I like the fishing. And like I said, on my bucket list, I'm going to put a bluefin on the deck of somebody's boat someday before I before I depart.
Well, here's the phone number. You give me a call. This I do the charters. You can call me up and get a fishing trip. It's 978-515-7739.
Well, there you
Book your tuna trip.
There you go. Captain Paul Hebert, everybody. The big show tonight. Four fish on at once of these giant bluefin tuna. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be on National Geographic. It's tonight. Captain, thank you so much.
It's at 9 o'clock tonight. You know, you'll see last week's episode at 8 o'clock. So if you tune in at 8 o'clock, you'll see last week's episode, which was a really good one.
Captain Paul Hebert, everybody, on the Steve Gruber Show.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
All right, welcome back to it on a Monday. We're going to go to the hotline quickly. By the way, the hotline is 888-900-9966. Bob checking in from Charlevoix this morning. Bob, welcome aboard. We don't have much time, but let's get to it, my friend.
Sure, thank you. Anyway, in the book of Leviticus, we were talking about food a few minutes back, or health. The book of Leviticus, the third book of the Bible, God tells us what to eat and what not to eat. Very specifically, and this is interesting. I know Jews over in Israel, and like intestinal cancer is almost unheard of with the Jews that follow the dietary law in the Bible. And here's something to think about. I read a book, God's Key to Health and Happiness, 40 years ago by Josephson, and I started eating what God says not to eat and what God says not to eat. I quit eating that. And mm-hmm. I started eating what he told us to eat in the book Leviticus.
And you've been healthy ever since.
Yeah, I'm 70 years old, and my blood pressure is fine. It's under 120, like over 70.
That's good, Bob.
I'm 70 years old.
Well, see, that's the thing. Eat healthy. Find a good. Maybe you found the best diet book in the world. Maybe it's the Bible. Bob, I greatly appreciate you checking in. I do. Bob, checking in from Charlevoix. You can do the same. 888-900-9966. 888-900-9966. Maybe that's the diet of choice. I'm just saying, you know, maybe that's the diet of choice to get healthy and make sure that you live a long, prosperous life where you feel good. I mean, what good is it if you don't feel good? All righty then. Let's shift gears now. Back to the politics for the last couple of minutes here before we head out the door for the day. But politics, the order of business, as Kasich and Cruz are getting together, to take on Donald Trump, their last-ditch effort to stop the Donald, John Kasich and Ted Cruz, for example, John Kasich is not going to run in Indiana. Just basically, don't vote for me, vote for Ted Cruz. This is their philosophy, apparently. This is their plan. Seems like an odd plan to me. On the line with me, Larry Pratt, the executive director, Gun Owners of America. Larry, welcome back.
Well, good morning. Good to be with you, sir.
So there's this whole contested convention thing. I mean, is this what we're down to for the other two?
It could be. I'm not sure if there's going to be the votes available to stop Trump. But if it is, then that's exactly what's going to happen. If Trump can't get it on the first ballot, a lot of people think that the convention will choose somebody else.
Well, a lot of people thought that, you know, he wouldn't be alive in July of 2015 or August or September, October. He certainly couldn't win any primaries. He'd have no chance of being the nominee. And here he is. He's going to be the nominee. And, of course, he has no chance of beating Hillary, but he just might. Let me ask you this, though, Larry. This is the important question for you and for your organization and for gun owners like myself. Do you think Donald Trump, if elected president of the United States, would be a friend of the Second Amendment?
He would be problematic. He has been for banning semi-automatic rifles and for extending the background check or the waiting period. He's not somebody that seems to be philosophically rooted in a Second Amendment tradition. He does come from New York, and he's not a guy that spent his time being philosophically part of a conservative or Republican movement. So if he, in fact, becomes the nominee and the president, we're going to have to be very zealous about working with him to try to get him to see that the Second Amendment position is the correct one.
Now, I had a chance to listen to Donald Trump. He was at an Outdoor Channel event at Las Vegas during the SHOT Show here in January, where he showed up with both of his sons, Eric and Don Jr., both, by the way, who are life members of the NRA, not your organization, but the point being is they are gun owners, defenders of the Second Amendment, and they were very clear about that and brought that to everybody's attention, and that's why they were there, and they made an appearance at the SHOT Show to talk about the Second Amendment. Do you not believe that his sons, who are gun owners and believe in the Second Amendment, would have significant influence on him as Commander-in-Chief and therefore the President?
I think that's a very hopeful sign that there is that kind of development among his children. It certainly reflects well on him and his wife as parents that their children have turned out, from everything I can see, to be rather exemplary. And that speaks very well for him on a personal level.
I think that's true. And a good measure of a person is how their kids turn out. I think that's a fair way. Oftentimes, if they have great kids, they probably did something right as parents.
At least they didn't do anything terribly wrong.
Well,
in
right.
my case, I could say that.
I didn't totally screw the deal up. Yeah. So, but clearly, I think it would be fair to say, Larry, that you believe that he would be a far better selection than Hillary Clinton.
Oh, there you absolutely have no further discussion, it seems to me, because Hillary Clinton, by her own admission, is a communist, a small C Saul Alinsky communist. As a senior at Wellesley College, she wrote her senior dissertation on his philosophy of how to bring down the system, of how to bring communism into the United States. And she didn't think he was rough enough. So
yeah.
She had that one criticism that he didn't foresee the need to work not just to attack the system from outside, but to work from the inside, and hence she became an attorney to do just that. And now she's on track to be pretty inside.
Right, so I guess my question to you then is if Donald Trump is the selection then, are you a Trump man if that's the way it goes?
Oh, there's no question, and I don't, you know, when I hear people talk about they'd vote against Trump, whether or not they'd vote for Clinton, it would be in effect to vote for Clinton. That, I think, reflects a lack of understanding of who Hillary Clinton is.
I think that's
you
fair.
Don't have to be excited about Donald Trump. In my case, you can be plenty excited about who Hillary Clinton is.
Yeah. Larry Pratt, always a great conversation. Executive Director, Gun Owners of America. Larry, thank you so much.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate you.
Talk soon. It's Monday on the Steve Gerber Show.